crop.
Hello and welcome to the 166th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, and we are recording this on the Tuesday evening after Arsenal's final match of the season, the away victory at Huddersfield. And also the night before the Europa League final in Lyon, we had hoped to postpone the recording of this podcast by a week, but it was not to be. I'll start with the traditional panel introductions, and in the light of developments since our last podcast, recorded on the 17th of April, 2 days after a disappointing defeat away to Newcastle, I've invited these three guests for their own unique perspectives. First up, he was the editor of the Gooner back in 1996 when Arsene Wenger became the Arsenal manager. And although he handed over the reins to yours truly in 2000, he contributed to the fanzine throughout the duration of Arsene's tenure, so was well placed to give one supporter's view on the last 22 years. So very good evening to the founder of the fanzine that gives this podcast its name, Mr. Mike Francis.
Good evening. That makes me feel old. Thanks,
Kevin. 22 years. Next, a board member of the Arsenal Supporters Trust, who will hopefully shed some light onto matters behind the scenes amongst the decision makers of the club in what will be a momentous shift for everybody connected with Arsenal. It's a warm welcome to Mr. Tim Payton.
Hello.
And last but not least, he has been reporting on Arsenal in recent seasons for the Islington Gazette, attending most, if not all, of Arsene Wenger's press conferences. So with perhaps a different perspective on the man at the centre of the recent storm, it's good to say hello again to Mr. Laith Youssef.
Hi, Kev.
So, gentlemen, I mean, obviously, events have been dominated by one man recently. It does seem like a lot of the podcasts centre around this guy. That won't continue for too much longer, but we've got to cover the ground. Arsene Wenger is no longer Arsenal manager. Laith, what were those final press conferences like once the decision had been made?
Yeah, they were quite emotional, really. As I always say, you know, it feels like you had to preface everything you ever wrote about or spoke about of Arsenal over the last few years with, he did really well in his first 10 years, but it's time to go, blah, blah, blah. But once the decision had been made, it was actually quite nice just to sort of sit there and watch this really dignified man, knowing he's going to leave, talk about the good times as much as the sort of, you know, he didn't want to talk about the bad times, really. But it was quite emotional. Obviously, on the Friday, I think it was Friday the 20th of April, when the news broke, I was really looking forward to a really quiet day after a really busy week again. And just came through, basically, and couldn't believe it to start with. When it was one of the most hectic days of my professional life, and I put about 15 stories and then raced down to the Emirates to sort of be at Gazidis' press conference as well.
Was that at the Emirates?
Yeah, 5 o'clock that evening. It was just one of the most incredible days ever, sort of covering it as a journalist, one of the most memorable as well. And then he gave, I'm just trying to think, the West Ham game on the Sunday, was it the Sunday the 21st?
22nd,
sorry, yeah. He gave a press conference afterwards. That was a bit strange, but there was the Coney ones that were quite sort of moving, really. The one last Thursday, that was the one, really. Obviously, Burnley, he got a round of applause from hard-bitten journalists. Obviously, John Cross, formerly the Gazette man, you know, got him a really expensive bottle of wine. Arsene Wenger gave a really, really dignified speech. He gave a lot of dignified answers, but he gave a really dignified speech just purely in terms of journalists. And he just said, you know, you've got a really hard job to do. Good luck for the future and things like that. And it was really appreciated. And then, obviously, on the Thursday, he was in quite impish mood. He was sort of answering stuff, sort of talking about Harry Kane as well and Highbury, and it was just really nice to see. And then he just went round shaking everyone's hand. Yeah. And whatever you say about him, he is a really, really dignified bloke. And I didn't feel sad because he was going. I felt sad because it's got to this position, because he should have walked out in a blaze of glory. But what always gets me, and even on Huddersfield did it absolutely brilliantly on Sunday. They were absolutely amazing. Can't pay enough credit, along with the Arsenal fans as well, obviously. But afterwards, even then, Wenger was like, oh, you know, we're only three players away from sort of challenging for the league. Well, whose fault is that? Seriously. And it was just, he's very dignified. He'd always give an articulate, honest answer, but he does distance himself from the problem sometimes. And the problem was the fact Arsenal simply weren't good enough under his reign over the last few years. But purely in terms of saying goodbye, it was done properly with Arsenal. It was done with class, with Huddersfield as well. Goodbye, Arsene. Mercy, Arsene. Thanks for the memories and time to move on, basically.
And yet, Arsene has said that he didn't agree with the timing of the announcement.
It depends whose story, because I broke an exclusive on that.
No, but he said and it in a press conference.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got an inside source on that, and I did a story that got picked up by a few people as well. Basically, he was told on the Thursday that he wasn't going to be retained at the end of the season. Mm. So he basically said, all credit to him, he said, this is according to my source, and I completely agree with them and believe them. He basically said, first thing he said was, I want my staff to be paid off. Mm. I want them all to be compensated, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, he talks about his own money as well, but that was secondary. And then he basically said, right, I'm going to go home, whatever, slept on it, obviously changed his mind and told the staff first thing Friday morning. And then it broke. That was the reason Gazidis had to do the press conference at 5 o'clock on the Friday. It was a strange, because I couldn't work. I was like, what's going on?
Hang on. It was Arsene's decision to make the announcement on the Friday.
Yes. Yeah, he forced their hand, basically.
Even though later he said, it wasn't my decision.
It wasn't his decision to leave the club.
So basically, that the club painted that as it wasn't his decision to on the timing of the announcement.
The club told him behind the scenes on that Thursday night it was time for him to go in the summer. So they were obviously going to do a mutual thing in the summer, like literally.
So do you think the club would have held the announcement until the season was over?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Wenger forced their hand on the Friday morning and basically said, look, I'm going to tell my staff, it's up to you what you do.
Yes.
And then Gazidis had to hastily do the press conference at 5 o'clock.
I almost agree with all of that. I've just heard one slight difference. And I would give the club credit for this. They did sack him. He was sacked on that Thursday. But I think they wanted the news out there because they correctly judged that he would get a great farewell. And it would be a real shame if those games didn't
happen.
Why did
Gazidis have the press conference on Friday? Gazidis and then not answer any questions?
Because Gazidis wanted to... Gazidis has spent 10 years being the little shit in the corner told what to do by Arsene and couldn't resist an opportunity to claim the spotlight and show I'm in charge. This is a man who got interviewed by Arsene Wenger when he arrived at his club. That was, I mean, I work in public relations in my day job. You never put someone up for a press conference if they haven't got a line to say, because it makes you look silly. He didn't have a line to say. It was purely about saying, look at me, everybody, I've won, finally, look at me. That was the only thing in the process. I thought that was a bit shameless. He didn't need to do that. But what I'm really pleased about is it's worked out, like a lot of people have been saying for a long time, that once Wenger knew, it's like the weight of the world has been lifted off his shoulder.
Absolutely.
And he would really have regretted if he'd have clung on and they'd have had to sack him in a board meeting, probably taking place this Thursday. That last home game would have had 30,000 at it, and by the time the lap of appreciation came round, even the players' families would have gone home, no one would have been there. But instead, and you can see he's really enjoyed it. I think he's relaxed. Yeah. It's kind of, because it hasn't been about the result now, it's been about 20 years, home and away, the thing with Ferguson, and I think it's been wonderful. And I think there's been this amazing buzz amongst Arsenal fans, because I think it's so many emotions mixed up. It is mercy, Arsene. It is thank you. It's also relief. Mm. Oh my God, you finally got your claws out of that club. And it's a bit of excitement, because I'm sure once we've got these questions out the way, now everyone's like, who's the new manager going to be? What's going to happen? Yeah. It's like a shot of adrenaline has gone into the club. So and it's given us, what, 2 or 3 weeks that would have been the worst season probably ever, but actually it's given us all memories, I think, that we'll have for as long as being Arsenal fans.
Fair point. I think what Tim said as well, the weight lifting off his shoulders almost. I think, we've said on this podcast time and time again, he doesn't look well. He was looking old. And suddenly, like 10 years had gone off his face. He enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And the bit at Huddersfield where he came, which, I only saw on TV, so, you might have seen him all those, where he came out at the beginning, and he waited until Huddersfield had done their lap of honour and then went to the fans, and you just kind of, where's that been?
Yeah.
You'd have engaged with the fans a bit more like that over the last 10 years, perhaps, who knows? I'm not saying things would have been different,
yeah.
but I think there would have been a lot of better feeling for him over the last 10 years.
Yeah,
but
I'm just pleased. Well, that, in terms
yeah,
of walking over.
I'm right, just pleased yeah. to see that he just looks so much better, and that he's given, as you say, he's been given the send off. You know, we all wanted to give him any time over the last 5-10 years, depending on who you are. But certainly, you know, we've shared this some good memories, and you know, let's not forget that.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I've got to start. I've got a lot of questions from our listeners through Twitter and email. I'll start off with one from Steve Pye, who is a contributor to the Gooner. He tweets, Arsene always said he wanted to leave the club in a better state than he found it. Financially, he's achieved this, but the new manager will have a big task ahead to rebuild, especially defensively. So do you think Arsene achieved his goal in terms of the playing staff? Now, when obviously he took over, he had a team that more or less the same players went on to win the double in 97-98. He's left a team which finished sixth. On the playing side, has it gone backwards?
Yes. I mean, the team he took over, you had the defence who actually in that last year under Riel weren't fantastic. Certainly weren't the defence that we've seen under George. But everything from that point forward was fairly mediocre. Okay, you had Bergkamp and Wrightley up front, but the midfield was. I'm not even sure I could be able to name most of the midfield from that sort of year. I wouldn't want to.
Well, hang on. I've got to come in here. You had David Platt and you had Paul Merson.
So you talking 95-96?
95-96. I mean, we weren't performing. I mean, you know,
no, we didn't
compared
perform.
To what we then got, yeah? But then we kind of feel like we're back to that now in terms of that sort of... We've got half a team. It's just the other half of the team now that we've got. We haven't got a defence. We haven't got a goalkeeper. Those are the positions we need. We've got a midfield that's okay. It ticks over. None of them are like exceptional. But up front, bloody hell, we've got some good players up front. So I can't feel that we've gone forward. But then, you know, we're comparing different eras or different generations. Christ, aren't we? You know, I mean, the game
has changed so much where it's almost impossible to compare.
You know, is it a better team?
The ownership structure, purely in footballing terms, he leaves a team in sixth place and he inherited a team in fifth, I guess, if you look at it
yep.
like that. I really do think the last 2 or 3 years done a lot of damage. That is a very lopsided squad in terms of personnel. It's got an extraordinary wage bill that's probably at about 230 million at the moment, which you think, wow, what are they getting paid that much for? And I think there is a big job to be done. The interesting thing is, two good signings, bit of luck with some early results, and Arsenal could fire forward. I mean, there's an awful lot of potential there, but, you know, not get it right in the transfer market now and have a new manager that fails to settle. And this could be a really difficult period for Arsenal because of what they're inheriting. It's quite possible to see another couple of years of coming sixth or seventh if things aren't got right. And I think, given where the club have been, you have to say that Arsene Wenger doesn't leave it in a particularly healthy state.
Well, I remember that last game of that 95-96 season when we beat Bolton to qualify for Europe, and it was just like, it was joyous. It was one of the most joyous games ever, those two late goals to sort of get us into Europe. And I think our expectations obviously have been set for the last 22 years, but we had Bruce Rioch that season. We're talking about the end of an era from George Graham. So there was a manager in between. So when Wenger leaves now, obviously the next manager will struggle, just like Rioch struggled a little bit. And it might be that the next but one manager is the one that's going to take us somewhere. But also, people on the flip side of it, people say to us, well, be careful what you wish for. But I'm not being funny, but Arsenal will never get relegated. The revenue streams are too big to buy in, players in January if we're struggling. It's not even going to be a replication of the mid-70s when we sort of finished 16th, 17th.
I couldn't agree more. Getting relegated now for Arsenal is not making the Europa League.
Yeah, yeah.
It's exactly, the amount of money in the game and the way there's that kind of big six now, but sixth or seventh is the equivalent of relegation virtually 20 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
The game's changed. You or I could manage Arsenal to sixth or seventh place. No, we really could. Look at that budget and that wage bill.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So that, what I was saying was like,
yeah,
Arsenal,
the next manager. Well, see, yeah. When
are you
being
interviewed?
Yeah, like this week?
I wait by the phone, but it never rings.
So it's like, you know, 16th, 17th position like in the mid-season, that's not going to happen either. So when people say, what, you know, what's the worst that could happen? We're not in the Champions League. We're not in the top four this season. We're not in the Champions League next season. We've finished sixth. It's like, well, how far are we going to fall from grace? We're 10th, 12th, 14th. It's like, what's the worst that could happen? We're almost in the worst scenario for Arsenal at the moment. So I feel for the next manager coming in. It might be the next but one manager that's going to take us back to glory. But no one's got a divine right to win.
Although the counter to that is, you could say it's an easier arrival for a new manager because it can't get much worse.
Yeah, fair point. But if you've seen like Twitter, people are talking about protests against Arsenal. It's not even been appointed.
You know, replacing Fergie, who left after a title, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm probably
skipping forward on the script, but I think everyone would be realistic and say that, you know, if a new manager could come in and grab that fourth place spot and get Champions League, that will be seen as a really strong start and everyone will be delighted. Yeah. So relatively speaking, it's not that big an ask for the new manager.
Yeah. And like you say, just improve the defence. We've got a defence that can defend against big teams. Like you said, we'll get a decent goalkeeper in, because going forward, we've got a lot of attacking options. So, yeah.
All right, well, let's go to one from a tweet from Fishpie Gooner. Arsene became the primary source of discord between Arsenal fans. His departure gives us all an opportunity for reconciliation. But is there a risk that bloggers and social media fan forums will encourage more debate when what the club needs from us is faith and support? Lines have been drawn, I think it's fair to say, between Arsenal fans. They are a divided nation. Let's just say Arteta's the next manager, for the sake of argument. Just to sort of play around with the idea of what might happen. Is that going to... I mean, what are the AKBs going to go with Arteta? Are the WOBs going to go against him? How's it going to play out?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think that would be probably my greatest wish, is that everyone just comes back together, because it's been horrible. Mm. I mean, you know, we've all been at games and it's been absolutely horrible at times the last few years. And you know, I'm on Twitter and I look at it, and God, you know, some of it's really depressing. Mm. You know, I mean, Arteta's... I'd love to know if we could wind back the clock 22 years and we had all the social media that we had now, what the reaction would have been when we appointed Wenger.
Yeah,
because everyone would have been going ballistic, you know. Or we can have Cruyff, or we can have this complete unknown from Japan. I mean, Christ.
Or even George Graham from Millwall. But, you know,
Exactly. I mean, you know, and I think that point's been made on Twitter quite a lot. You know, you look at Arsenal's appointments over the years... We've rarely gone for the big name, have we? So, you know, maybe Arteta is rightly the favourite. But, yeah, my just come together. You know, a lot of us have wished for this. And, you know, a lot of us have said anyone but Wenger, which, you know, that might have been a bit overstating it. But, you know, people have said that. So let's give whoever it is an opportunity. And, you know, come together, support the team. And let's make it an enjoyable place to go and watch football again, rather than what it's been like over the last few years.
Well said.
First of all, I mean, I don't really like the premise of the question, in the sense that we should all be like North Korean nodding dogs. I mean, part of football, though, is debate, isn't it? I mean, I think this, you know, what's the point in turning up at football if you don't think you know the best 11 and you don't think, you know, the team should play? That's what it's about. And it's always been there. It's just that now there is this... megaphone called social media. Of course it was there. I mean, people think this is bad. I just about remember, you know, when I was a little kid, but them piling off the North Bank to go after Terry Neill in Avenel Road and protest. The idea that this has only been about Wenger is a bit indulgent. But what there has been is, he has become an incredible, like, because he's been there so long, it got much more polarised, if you like, around him, whereas the normal scenario, I think, is when results aren't good, people turn on the board and the owner. So I don't think any new manager who comes in won't get a love like Wenger, because that takes years to accrue. But equally, I don't think they'll get
people hate him the same way, because in many ways it was almost like the love created the hate, and then it became so entrenched, and he was clearly there beyond his sell-by date, well, certainly maybe in my view, because of what he'd done early on. So I think that if things get messy, obviously all of this is about results, everyone going on about what they think about Arteta. He wins the first four games and he'll be God. He loses the first four games and people, you know, God knows where we'll be. But I think the difference will be that if it doesn't go well, you even kind of saw it in a way, the banner at the last game saying Kroenke, you're next. But I think it will go at Gazidis and Kroenke. If, you know, the next level of discontent, I'm sure, will be at that level.
That's a good point.
I think you're both right, but I remember, like, we all did it. You'd go up to, like, I don't know, Middlesbrough away, and you'd be, like, meeting Arsenal fans on the train or in the pubs near the station. You'd be all in it together. You'd all be like, what's going on today? You know, where are we going? What's the team? There was absolute 100% unity, and it was brilliant. I'm getting goosebumps even now thinking about those sort of days. If you're talking about social media, I don't think it's the nature of social media. No one's ever going to be united on social media. You're never, ever going to get a response from someone who disagrees with you if you go back and have a conversation with them on social media for them to go, oh, do you know what? You're right. You've convinced me there. I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm talking about. That will never happen. So social media, by its very nature, is divisive. In the real world, I really, really would like to think, first game next season and the whole of next season, everyone is behind the new manager, whoever he is. And any fan that doesn't get behind the new manager because he doesn't like him, because he's not a big name or anything like that, go and watch wrestling or something. Seriously, don't watch the Arsenal, because you're not wanted. Get behind the new man. You've wanted a new man in for X amount of years. Get behind him, support him. Debate his football terms. Debate that. It's your opinion. Everyone's got an opinion. No one's right or wrong in terms of opinion. But get behind him. It's a new start. Let's be excited about this.
Right, well, let's say there is a buzz at the start of next season. Is that going to translate into atmosphere at the Emirates?
I hope so, yeah. Yeah, the atmosphere before the West Ham game, admittedly when it started, I think people were a bit confused. They were, you know, what do we do here? But the atmosphere before, there was a real buzz. There was an excited chatter. And the Burnley game was obviously fantastic. That was brilliant because it was Wenger's farewell. That is what it should be like every game. Obviously, it's an all-city ground. It's Arsenal. You know, it's almost like you've got to impress us rather than we're going to sing our hearts out. But at the same time, that is what the club is capable of. The Atletico Madrid game, that was brilliant, that atmosphere. I'm not a big fan of flags and all the rest of it. But, you know, I think it was Red Action who did it. And fair play to them. You know, that I didn't think it beforehand, but they did really well. And the atmosphere was brilliant. And that's what it should be like for every big game at Arsenal, basically.
I think the atmosphere was brilliant in comparison to what we've known.
The Man City game, after the League Cup final. Yeah,
you know, it's still none of those games.
How many better atmospheres were they than the Atletico Madrid in the last 12 years? For me, the first 8 minutes of Man United in the Champions League semi-final, but there was nothing better.
The Emirates is never going to be a cauldron anymore.
No, I'm not saying it's going to be a cauldron, but that is the level that we should be at, basically.
And we are a sort of smallish echo chamber that talks to each other, including on social media and doing podcasts like this. The vast majority of people who come into an Arsenal game aren't on Twitter, aren't following much of the social media, certainly don't listen to podcasts like this. You know, there's a smallish community.
Why not? They should be.
But we don't underestimate. And one of the things that Arsenal noticed this year, and probably did for them, it's an awful lot now. That stadium is kind of middle class, become much more general in its fan base, and they stopped coming because just not as much fun as going to National Trust home that weekend or going out for a meal with the family. That's the reality. And even when that ground's full, and yes, it's much, much better, and the one or two games you point to, that is not a raucous cauldron by any sense. And we've got to accept that.
Do you think Spurs will have a good atmosphere and move that away, aren't they?
Where is that? I think that it's going to be a better stadium. But I think
the atmosphere? No, do you think the atmosphere
will be
good?
They'll have exactly what we've got. In year one, because it's new, and if they get some results, it might look quite good. But ultimately, they're going to settle down relatively similar to us. Look at the ticket prices. Look at the profile that will settle down, particularly in year two or three. Even at Anfield and Old Trafford now, they're getting the same issue. I mean, Anfield on a European night can still get back to what I think of as that is proper. But you talk to the Liverpool fans, and against West Brom in a league game that kicks off at 2 o'clock on a Sunday, and they say you can hear a pin drop, and it's not like it was. The modern fan base is changing in its way it makes noise and its expectation. It really is.
So if they brought back safe standing, would you think the atmosphere changed?
I think it would make a small difference, but it wouldn't make a huge difference because you've now changed the nature of the people going in and what they expect, and the age as well, because of the ticket pricing. So I think it would need a lot bigger effort than just to do that. I think a little bit of safe standing would help, but you know, football grounds aren't a cauldron. The biggest challenge Arsenal are going to have, it was there anyway, is empty seats. And what they really need to work harder on, and here is my hobby horse, but home credits, taking tickets off people that only come 3 or 4 times out of the 27, there's a lot like that, you know, owning them just...
How many would you say?
I know a few years ago there were 800 season ticket holders who came twice or less.
Really?
Amazing, mostly in club level. But if you own £1 million in the city, you buy it and you might go 3 or 4 times. It doesn't matter to you. You don't need to pass it on for the money. Mm. People know, you watch, but everyone says, oh, the season ticket sale will drop. It won't, because people know it's sort of like the modern version of owning a share in the club. It gets you in. I don't want to lose it in case we get good again. But I think one of the dangers they've got is people have got out of the habit of coming. And even if we do well under the new manager, and by well, I think probably means third or fourth, given where our squad is, I think you'll see games down at 45,000 again. And we've got another problem next year, is we get all those graveyard games, the midday 1 o'clock Sunday. Mm. That's bloody hard, isn't it? That is the worst time. And even if you do turn up, you don't feel like making much noise. You really don't. But what we desperately need is at least one new marquee signing, although we got some in January, but we need a marquee signing and a new manager that hits the ground with a couple of good wins so that the buzz carries on into September.
Gosh. Hopefully the buzz will carry on longer than September.
Well, no, you know, look, just to kind of almost get it going and keep it going. If a new manager has got 4 points out of 9 or 5 points out of 12, oh my god, it's a slog of a season.
But how about he's got 4 points out of 9 because he's played big teams or better teams? The fence is working, we're attacking well, we're scoring lots of goals.
You know what I mean. You know, if the die looks cast a few games in that we're at best scrapping for 4th, 5th, it's going to be a slog.
But won't people still be excited the fact it's just not Wenger? Even now you wake up and you think, oh yeah, Wenger's not there.
Only if you see the difference on the pitch.
But then every other football fan would go, oh, look what we wish for. Like Huddersfield were doing on Saturday, Sunday, you know, everyone does
I've had that from Burnley fans, you know. My son's a Burnley fan, and I met up with a few of them before the game, and, you know, they were all going, what are you hoping for next year? And I was going, just something different. You know, if we finish 6th next year, but actually we're doing things properly, we're not making defensive errors every game.
Progress,
we're actually got a player in the centre of the park that's working up and down the pitch and putting in tackles. I'll be happy.
Yeah.
I really will. You know, and people quote me on that next year when I'm moaning about finishing 6th. But I won't be happy, but I will be deep.
If we come 6th, there is no type of football that we'll play that will make you happy. I know you.
Yeah, all right, you might. I was trying to think of an excuse.
As a minor point, just talking about Leicester City fans having a go, basically they were saying, I was at the game and they were singing, you stabbed in the back or something, and I just tweeted out 2 words, Claudio Ranieri. It's like, you know, we're not the only ones, basically, and we're not that bad.
I mean, one thing which we've got to bear in mind, you know, the new manager's got to work with the team. We've got a World Cup this summer. Now, let's say a lot of the players might make the quarterfinals. And that will be around about...
It's not like it has been in the past.
There's not actually that many players
who are actually going to the World Cup.
It's partly a reflection on our team. And the fact that the one player that I think everyone, you know, it's so exciting to see what he does next season is Aubameyang, and he doesn't go to a World Cup.
You know, who have we got? We've got Emeni, obviously Sanchez has gone, so he's got nothing to do with
it. Ozil's not this one.
Mustafi's not going to make the German squad, so...
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, Koscielny's injured. Yeah.
Jack Wilshere got dropped today.
Yeah, he's not going to make the England squad, so
not like in the past, there should be already a go in Singapore. Yeah, firing. Yeah. He's not in the squad. He's
not in the squad.
So, actually, has Lacazette made it?
I would imagine.
Lacazette must have.
They've
got an embarrassment of riches.
It just doesn't play there.
Having said that, the forwards you don't need to worry about so much. You know, the team is going to be
It's a defensive discipline organisation. Yeah,
mostly worked on in terms of...
Czechs retire... Ospina goes. Czechs, I think it might only be four or five.
Yeah.
So it's not such a big issue. Mm. But the one you mentioned, the one that I think that, you know, you almost have to be talking to the managerial candidates at interview saying, what would you do about this issue? Because it's huge, is Mesut Ozil. What do you do? Because do you say, well, look, for better or worse, he's signed up on a big long-term contract, so we build around him. Do you think you can do that? Is there, you've got a structure that will work? Do you think you can motivate him? Or is it a bit like the Charlie Nicholas of Arsenal that wasn't immediate? Has he got to be cleared out?
21st century Charlie Nicholas.
No, but in some ways, one of the ways that Graham demonstrated his authority over that squad by moving out of Playboy.
Tony Woodcock, you know, the fancy boy who didn't deliver it when it mattered. And it, you know, and they did do some things for him before getting there.
And it's a terrible dilemma because I don't think that you've actually got an easy choice because we've given him so much wages, basically, because on the rebound we panicked and overpaid him when Sanchez went. And I'm not sure you'd be able to move him on. But that is, I think Ozil is going to hang like a shadow over the squad. Let's just hope the new manager can kind of extract something from it and get what he's worth. But I fear, you know, he likes London, he likes that big salary, he's getting married and he's going to be coming back from a World Cup with Germany. You know, I hope I'm wrong, but don't expect much from him next season.
Fair point. I mean, my thing with
you never do manga, but you also probably know I'm right, don't you?
but the only thing I've heard is it's like creative players.
I'm just post-moss season
ticket. No, you've done that, whatever. God, you paid for it when it was Molo and Hillier.
Yeah, exactly.
A bit cheaper then.
I mean, the players would have taken it.
But John Jensen scored a goal. Who parted for a week?
But you know, it's with a creative player, maybe you can build a team around him and don't expect them to track back. And,
well, and that's, my point. That's my point. Yeah. But you've either got a total build around him.
Exactly. And we haven't done that yet. So why not?
Done it in a way, don't you feel?
I mean, there has been times when he has tracked back at the start of the season that really motivate, then he just disappears, doesn't he? And he is a conundrum. And maybe that is the baggage you get with a really, really attacking, creative midfielder who sees things differently than anyone else.
I keep it going, because I want to see what you think about this, you see him all the time, but probably one of the players who's essential alongside Ozil, given the issues, is Ramsey.
Yeah, all day long.
But that's almost number two on my list of questions to a potential new manager. This guy's coming down to a final year. Do you think he'd resign for you? But what would you do? All of the messaging at the moment is that he's going to go. They won't let that farce that they had with kind of Sanchez and so on carry on. I think he wants out. But I'd be asking the new manager almost to game plan these different scenarios and what he'd do. Because if you're stuck with Ozil and Ramsey's gone, you've got a huge amount of work to do.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got to offer Ramsey, if not parity, something near that.
We just can't. We haven't got the money there.
We ain't going
to
offer him.
But then how much would it cost to buy a new replacement?
Well, that's always the argument.
Part of the theory behind getting Mislintat in is that he could pick up the calibre of player that Arsenal did in his early years on the cheap. You know, so you like, you know, the next Anelka.
Yeah.
Is. You know, he bought the Greek centre-back for $5 million.
Ivan Mavropanos?
We don't know, but, you know, looks to be a defender in there.
Yeah,
I've got the right attitude, doesn't it?
Yeah,
so you've got that attitude that we remember from
the
very
green.
Absolutely. He had a really good debut at Man United.
But Tony Adams was green when he first got in.
He scored a goal in his debut against Sunderland.
He was 21, but 17, 18.
But you're dreaming of not coming sixth.
Now, it's interesting that the club have dispensed with a lot of Arsenal's what I will call acolytes in terms of the backroom staff. They've made offers to Bold and Lehman to remain, or they're under contract and they've been asked to continue.
I think that might be slightly overdoing it. I think their situations might still be being left for a new manager to arrive and settle, but maybe it's the same thing.
Right, okay. I'm just thinking, what is the thinking from the board? Do they understand, perhaps, that these guys haven't been able to do the work they can?
Well, I heard today, and this disappointed me, that the way Arsenal have handled the departures of these guys hasn't really been very fitting. You know, it's been done by HR.
I think if you've been at a club 22, 23 years, you know, Ivan Gazidis ought to at least give you a chat and thank you for your service and face up to it. But on the other hand, I wouldn't feel that this might look like a sort of mass clear out, but actually, you know, everyone's hung around for a long time. So, you know, if one of these had left each season over the last five seasons, you wouldn't have even commented, and some of them names you barely know. I don't think there's that. It's that surprising or that much of a change. Like you say, Arsene went on for a long, long time, got very comfortable with staff around him, and this is a time to, you know, to freshen up. It's the continuation of bringing other people in. So I don't worry too much about the, you know, what's going on, other than I think they're bringing in people who are 10, 15, 20 years younger, fresher with ideas, new ideas, yeah. new ways
Arsene
of working.
Arsene said himself, didn't he? Like, you know, when he arrived, there was, you know, we were a football club with 80 people, and now we're a business with 700. Yeah. You know, so as you say, like five people leaving in a short space of time, especially when we're on a seasonal business. You know, it's rare that you get rid of five people in February or something, isn't it? You know, but it's five people leaving in a year is nothing in a business of our size.
Yeah.
The fact it's five people that are in footballing key positions, shall we say, they're not, then, you know, maybe that makes it more, that's why it's more of a story, but it's not really.
I completely agree. Purely in football terms, not one of those players, one of those backroom staff can complain about having a raw deal in terms of being released, because they've had a fair crack of the whip. They've been with Wenger and they've done whatever they need to do, and it hasn't ultimately been that successful. And obviously a new man coming in will want potentially his own staff in certain positions. So yeah, like you say, apart from the HR issue, I don't think any of those people can ever...
No, they're almost certainly getting a sort of a year out of it, because they were all on these contracts that followed Arsene. Just
absolutely.
Of course, and I don't begrudge Arsene Wenger at all. He signed a contract. He's quite right to expect it to be paid. But let's not beat around the bush that it's kind of like, oh, love the club, that kind of thing. He's an employee and he's going to get paid his final year, and it's going to have an impact on Arsenal's ability to sign and retain new players. But that's not his fault. The contract was signed. He's got every right to take his money for that. If you've got a particularly big grumble about that, grumble about the people who gave him the contract.
Absolutely.
What do you think... I mean, Josh Kroenke was over for 3 months, reputedly running the rule over the operation. Is he going to have more influence?
I did a piece in the Gazette today, actually, online. Obviously, we sort of topped it with, Bookie suspended and Betts and Arteta. And I sort of, talked about Kroenke and his American dealings and Josh Kroenke as well. Kroenke is not afraid to make a decision that will bring in a young man. I did a bit of research and investigation into the Rams, and everyone knows. I mean, it's Sean McAvoy. He was 31 years old when he was brought into the LA Rams in January 2017, after that club underachieved for a while. He was voted best coach in American football last season. The season just gone in 2018. Kroenke is quite happy to do that. Everyone sort of portrays him as he doesn't care and all this, and I don't think he cares to a certain extent, but when he will make a decision, when he does make a decision, he doesn't care what people think about a decision. He'll do what he thinks best, basically. And I was sort of reading articles from the Denver Post and things like that. And ironically, the thing that Kroenke does care about is empty seats, because he doesn't want all the corporate, all the advertising, all the TV, all that sort of stuff to reflect badly on his organisation, basically. So ironically, it was empty seats probably did for Wenger more than anything else.
Surely it was the finances.
Finances are a sort of byproduct of that as well.
Kind of the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
They paid for seats, most of them.
They are, but
no one buys anything.
But what
has anyone actually bought any food in?
I think it all spins off each other, doesn't it? So the seats are empty because the performances aren't very good, which means you're finishing lower in the league, which means you get less prize money in the league, you play in competitions, you get less broadcast income, which means you don't get the bonuses on the Champions League.
So
I think people overly focus on like one element. People say, oh, it was the empty seats that did for Arsene Wenger. No, it wasn't. It was the results. Yeah. What did for Arsene Wenger was the team wasn't getting the results. Not
but
getting
the
results.
They're byproduct of
the results. Yeah. There's no empty seats up at Liverpool at the moment.
Yeah. So it's a line that reflects everything that goes on, basically. But the empty seats were almost, from what I've sort of read about it, was the killer, because he doesn't want empty seats. And obviously there is so much more to do with that as well. But Kroenke will... If he thinks Arteta's right for the job, he will absolutely go for it.
So which Kroenke are we talking about?
Sorry, Stan Kroenke. Yeah. But Josh Kroenke. Josh Kroenke. I read up on him as well. He's obviously becoming a lot more sort of influential in the club. And he had a rented property over the winter to sort of learn more about the club and stuff. And he was at the University of Missouri. He did a basketball scholarship. He's been at Lehman Brothers. He's done various bits at the National Baseball sort of Association in America. He is apparently a really, really good guy. He's really humble. The quote I saw in the Denver Post today was, he's just like you and me, but he's got more sports franchises. Much as I heard the word sports franchises, I thought that was a really good line. Have you met him, have you?
Yeah.
And what was he like?
Very, very deferential to his dad. It was a while ago. Let's not beat around. I mean, nice
where
guy.
Where did you meet him?
I met him, we're talking like, this is a long time ago. There was a time when the Arsenal board said, we don't want your sort.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he wasn't
on
the board, and yet he was talking to the Arsenal supporters, Justin, talking to me. And I met Kroenke Senior several times.
But where did you meet Josh Kroenke then?
With his dad. Oh, it was down at, they always stay in Claridge's.
Okay.
So it was in the most amazing suite in Claridge's.
Now, what was he like as a person?
£4,000 a night. He didn't have a lot to say, but let's first of all, I mean, I think he's a very average businessman. Thinker. He's only in that role. I mean, you know, how did he get appointed to Arsenal's board? That was a thorough recruitment search, wasn't it? Oh yeah, they looked high and low. And you know, his sport is basketball. He knew nothing about football. Yeah. I'd worked out his sport was basketball, so I looked up something about the Nuggets, and he came to life. Like, if I talk to you about what do you think of this promising young left back Arsenal got, and you sort of jump it back. He's clearly spent a lot more time in the business since then. Everything I know about what is going on at Arsenal at the moment is that the Kroenkes aren't that involved.
Right.
The big decision that they had to buy into was that Wenger went. And they obviously had to give that the tick. This recruitment is being done by Gazidis with the two new people that came in. Now, of course, when you're the chief exec, you might want to impress your bosses or act in a way that you know they'll go with, and you know that they're quite happy to go with a young coach because of what they've done in their other franchises, so it makes you bolder there. But I can tell you, there's far more straightforward reasons of why Arsenal are looking at the type of manager they are at the moment than the Kroenke philosophy, and it's these. First of all, Arsenal don't have very much money to spend. So the manager they're going to go for, you can't afford to be spending £10-15 million compensation to get a manager out of a club and then spend it on his wages, and then double up on Arsene Wenger. You really can't. These stories about what Arsenal have to spend are correct. You look at the budgets, you look at what Simon for the AST produces. So they've got a budgetary pressure. They could break the bank on an Allegri, but Allegri would arrive and be told you've got a budget of about £25 million left to spend by the time they'd spent that money. So I think that's a big factor. But another factor is Arsenal have actually, now, and I think led by Gazidis, but have put in place a management structure which doesn't particularly suit a big beast. It suits a coach coming in to work alongside a director of football and the scout. And I think Arsenal did their big transfer dealings in January. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, a lot of the decisions being taken now about contracts and who's going where are being taken. I'm not sure you'll see our next coach, manager. He'll be part of the voice in that decision making, but he won't do the buying and selling or have a final decision. They'll never let someone be in the decision again where a manager says, yeah, stick £1 on that £40 million bid. That will never happen again. And then the third reason, and this is definitely going to make you probably go, well, what are you on about? But Arsenal have also got to realise that they're not the hottest property at the moment to go to a manager.
Nonsense.
And I know you would crawl over broken glass
absolutely.
Here. But if you are one of Europe's top managers, you're
also one of the world's top clubs.
There's
a list as long as you're wrong.
Late.
But I'm not sure.
Seriously,
we're
the Arsenal. No one would ever turn down Arsenal Football Club.
Arsenal's record in Europe.
Who cares?
Maybe a manager who wants some profile.
Arsenal are
one of the biggest
clubs in the world. We're the Arsenal. That counts so much.
I think we could have.
You're not a manager worth salt if you ever turned down Arsenal.
Well,
and no one ever would.
Alex Ferguson did.
Yeah, obviously Alex Ferguson. He's Man United. Why would he go to Arsenal? We're talking about.
He was offered.
But he's Man United.
Hang on.
He wouldn't go to Arsenal, would he?
He was offered the job before George Graham.
Was he though? I can't even remember that.
Yeah.
But that's your interesting point here, Leif. There are, I don't know at the moment, somewhere between
sort of
no,
10,
he wasn't.
10 or 12.
He wasn't.
There were about 10 clubs.
He was. What happened?
When was that?
86.
So when in 86? So Don Howe left in March 86 because we tapped up Terry Venable.
He was offered the job.
And obviously we brought in Stuart Burns.
He was offered the job.
We brought George Graham in May 86. So when was this magical Fergie offer then?
It was before George, and the reason...
When before George? Seriously.
Well, just.
A couple of weeks.
He was first choice.
It's in his book about...
Of course it would be. Of course it would be.
It's in Aberdeen. But let's come back to where we are now. Because I think almost any manager in the world, of course, would take Arsenal, except for one of the big beasts, who might have been at one of the clubs that does very well in the Champions League every year, actually gets in it, and does well in it. And I'm not sure an Allegri automatically, you know, four times in a row with Juventus, the squad he's got there looks at Arsenal and goes, you know, you might just about persuade him with a huge cheque and a big house in Hampstead, but he's not going to be, but he's going to think hard about taking on that Arsenal squad and the financial issues. Similarly, someone like an Enrique, who's like, no, I think I can get more money and to spend elsewhere, coming out of Barcelona. So I think you put those factors together, it's not the easiest gig at Arsenal, not a lot of money to spend, and as a management structure, they want to put you into, add all of that together, and that leads you to a Vieira or an Arteta, not an Allegri or an Enrique.
I think a bit of it, we're damaged as well by what happened at Man United after Ferguson, because everyone's going to draw those comparisons, and like you said earlier, Lacey, you know, maybe it's going to be the next manager after this next one who will reap the benefits.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of them will probably look at that and go, God, yeah, no, I've got to untangle the 22 years of Arsene Wenger there with his claws in the club, with his finger in every single pie. I've got to undo that. Yeah, maybe I'll wait a year.
But you've got to...
Because they'll get somebody else in. Yeah, but you've got all these revenue streams, all the top managers have got
you've
that.
You've got a great squad.
All the top managers have got that. Allegri's got that, you know, you've got Zidane's got it. Zidane's probably going to get sacked after three consecutive Premier League and Champions League. You know, but you're going to have all these, you know. So I get both your points, you know. I'd love to be with you later and say no one will ever turn Arsenal down. But the realist is Tim, who says we haven't got our pick of everyone. We just haven't.
But we could have got Guardiola and we could have got Klopp.
We could have done, but we're not going to get them now. Why not? You just tell me no one would turn us down.
Because they're quite happy where they are.
So people will turn us down. Nonsense.
Well, why would we? How can we prize a Champions League?
I'm going to give you a couple of names just to throw a bit of whatever it is into the Unai Emery. Paris Saint-Germain available.
It's got good record in the Europa League.
Yeah, I've been impressed with him for the PSG sort of games, and it's not particularly impressive. He's obviously done well for Phil, but no.
I'm going to give you another one then, Antonio Conte.
That's quite left field, but
no, he was in my top three.
He did well for Chelsea when he won the league, and Chelsea's such a political club that he's obviously suffered. He just wants to be sacked to pick up his compensation to go somewhere else, basically.
I would like Conte.
Organised the Chelsea defence, didn't he?
Yeah.
And what do we want more than anything is to someone come in and organise.
It was that 3-0 when we beat him 3-0 in like the late September, and he basically come in.
He won't have to wait until September. He knows what he has to do.
Absolutely, but they played four at the back, and he wasn't going to come in and go, do you know what, I play three at the back, this is what we're going to do. He waited till there was a defeat, and we absolutely walloped that today, didn't we? 3-0, it could have been a lot worse. And he literally went in the Monday morning and goes, do you know what, lads, well, you've done it your way now, we'll go three at the back. And they blew everyone away. Yeah, he's a good coach, absolutely.
I would like us to pair up an experienced older head with one of these young coaching talents.
Well, it could have been like that.
The other one that I think would work really well is Benitez and one of the young ones. That incredibly good manager. And actually, the job he's done on the resources and the politics at Newcastle is superb. He knows how to organise a team and get a result. And it could be a Conte, but one of that, an Ancelotti, a Benitez, a Conte, and then pick, is it Vieira or Arteta, but bring one of them in as kind of first team coach for the succession planning. But no chance, because Arsenal haven't got the money.
We'd have to play two.
But then you go back to you made a good point about it is a coach structure now. They're not looking for a manager, they're looking for a coach. And what does a coach do? He basically coaches sides. So
Ivan Gazidis has just like expanded his office at Colney. He doesn't, Benitez or Conte to get sent back to Ivy House.
Let me at least get some listener contributions in. Where was the one about Gazidis?
Is it all about him?
Well, yeah, you saw these on Twitter, didn't you?
Yeah,
Well, I'll read a few out anyway, just because I need to cover these, so these guys are mentioned. We've covered this, but Emilio Zorlacki said, is this all about Gazidis' ego? Moving office to Colney and his farcical, stage-managed and pointless press conference at 5 p.m. on that Friday. We've covered that, Emilio, but many thanks for that. Simon Rose, a contributor to the Gooner, he asks, will fans unite behind any manager than Allegri? Brackets, Arteta is hardly an innocent passerby in fancy dress. He knows the club and could be great. Who knows? Will the fans unite? I mean, I think Tim's covered this by saying if he gets a couple of results, they will.
And also, I don't think that the manager, like we also covered, the manager is not the totemic figure like Wenger became.
Well,
so I think if things go wrong,
yes,
it will turn on the board and Gazidis much more, because actually, in the past, it was almost about, were the board right or wrong to leave Wenger alone? Whereas now, this is the catalyst to change. This is like beating his chest. Look at me at 5 o'clock on a Friday, moving into Colney, hiring my, you know, is he going to be called the director of football? Do you think? Are they rearranging the letters on the door now? Because he had some stupid title like, you know,
football relations.
Because Arsene didn't like the title. But you know, I think it will settle in around. You know, if things don't go well, then it's going to get very difficult for Gazidis and the board.
Well, Noah Emereb emails, if media reports are to be believed, we are getting Arteta as our manager. Obviously don't want him to fail, but if he does, should Gazidis' position be under threat? Big fan of the podcast, keep up the good work. So thanks for that. Gazidis' position under threat? Do you think there's any chance of that?
I don't know, I can't see it. I mean, I remember... And I probably talked to someone on maybe a podcast last year about it. I mean, I've stopped going to the fans forum now, partly because I feel it's a waste of time. But I remember going to one towards the end of last season in April. And that was the one where Gazidis came out with the catalyst for change quote, which was widely bandied around all season, really. And I remember thinking then, there's no way Gazidis and Wenger are both going to be at the club in August 2017. And, you know, from what I've read, and I'm not saying I believe this, but I can imagine it, you know, that Wenger wasn't going to get offered a new contract, picked up the phone to Stan and said, give me a new contract, Stan.
Well,
and
on Stan, the back Stan, of an FA Cup win.
And on the back of it, and Stan not sure told Ivan what to do. And I then thought that Ivan would go, and so I was surprised he didn't. But, he, you know, what he's then done is put in place the structure that we've got now. I think he's got a bit of a stay of execution.
It's been so dysfunctional this year, Mike, which probably adds to the results, which might not be wrong, but Gazidis and Wenger have barely been on speaking terms all season.
Not surprising.
He's built this new team. The transfers that went on in January had hardly any Wenger.
Yeah, and I wrote about that as well. Into it at all.
So in a way, you know, behind the scenes, it's been like warfare, but they have also been building towards this new structure, and it's very much in Gazidis's making. Now, whether or not, I mean, chief execs tend to get away with this, you know, a lot more than maybe they should. So you can't make that call, but I definitely think he's got to be a lot more accountable now.
Yeah, he will, but I think you know, he's got, most chief execs will get given a one era, won't they? One managerial era.
In
football. You know, I think if he gets the next one wrong or it goes badly, whatever, you know, wrong, right or wrong, it's going to be hard to say. But if it doesn't go well,
yeah,
I think he'll probably get given another chance.
Yeah,
unless it goes really badly.
Yeah, unless it's absolutely United,
what's really badly again?
Yeah, exactly.
Where do they find the credits to stick us on that season ticket, you know, to force us to pay for games that no one wants to go to. Coming eighth is like meltdown.
On the flip side, you would like to think fans would just be like, do you know, it's our team. I'm going to watch my team.
Well, yeah,
I'm like, not going to try.
They stop coming.
There'd be a lot less of it to watch.
As in what?
We've come eighth.
No, you're European.
We're winning the League Cup then.
then I'm including on the season.
Good point.
I don't know. I just don't know. Why can't people just support their team? Why can't they go, do you know what?
You're
whether
so
we win or not. Honestly, yeah, I am sometimes. Like, I've got a pair of green gazelles on, so yeah, yeah, I suppose it must be. But why can't people just support the team? Why can't they just say, do you know what? I'm going to go every week, I'm going to catch up with my pals, I'm going to go to the pub, have a few beers, cheer for 90 minutes. Whatever happens, happens.
Because the nature of a football
supporter... I suppose it's not 1986 anymore, is it?
It has just a bit.
I take it all back, yeah.
I'm going to put this one in now by Michael Nicol. Who would be your first new summer player signing and why?
How long's a piece of string? You need a keeper, you need a centre-half, you need a defensive midfielder. Because I always said about Granit Xhaka, he falls between, well, three stones, basically. He's not creative enough to be a creative midfielder in the mould of Ozil, although not many people are. He's not box-to-box enough. He's not dynamic enough to be a box-to-box midfielder, so to influence a game. And he's not disciplined enough to be an N'Golo Kante. So, great, he takes corners and free kicks. Good luck to him. 35 million, whoever signed that off, well done. So we need a defensive midfielder. But I would break the bank on Oblak, the Atletico Madrid.
100 million?
Pick a figure, I've no idea. But
that's his buyout clause.
Is it though, really? I mean,
apparently.
Yeah, there's so many rumours going around.
Spent an entire budget twice over.
If we had a keeper who could save us 10, 12 points a season,
we can't afford
that. We'd only be 25
points. But I'm so fed up as a fan. Obviously, a journalist, I'm completely impartial in the press box. But as a fan of Arsenal Football Club, having watched them for 35 years odd, when we play against the big side, we always fucking lose. Because we can't defend. That Man United game, that 3-1. Yeah, we just fell apart. It was...
So keeper's not necessarily going to stop that.
Oh, but did you see Cech and Mustafi against West Ham?
I know, but you need to defend. You know?
But if you have a world-class keeper, yeah, you'd like to think your world-class keeper and a coach who can drill the back line, that keeper can then interact with the defence. I agree with you. I think we do need a goalkeeper half as well.
Mine would be, but it's, you know, I think yours is, you know, it's fantasy transfers, and yours probably was for the amount of money. Mine is fantasy because of where I want him to come from, but Toby Alderweireld is available.
Yeah.
In John Johnson.
And that,
I agree. I think he'd want to come, but
you know,
Spurs will.
But there's only got a year left or whatever, so
they will do anything they can.
David Dean would have done it.
The only way he's coming is in the summer of 2019.
I think Gazzini's, hello, Mr. Levy.
Back page of the standards today was about that, because he's been linked with Man United, but he's got 2 years left on his contract. But he's got a get out clause next year that they would accept 25 million for him in a year's time, according to the standard. Don't disagree, but you know, just to throw one in that's maybe a tad more realistic.
Go on,
Harry Maguire.
Very good player. Yeah,
I think he's really impressed me. He impressed me when he was at home. Yeah. I thought we should have bought him last year. I know my mate Mr. Slaughter will back me up on this one. We both talked about him about a year ago, and I just think he's a proper defender. I don't think he needs coaching. He knows how to defend, but as an extra advantage, he doesn't know how to ping a ball as well. He can play a 40-yard pass as good as Xhaka.
Yeah, he's got good technique, isn't he?
He's a good player. I like him. Yeah. And but where we could have had him for what, 15 million last year?
But we could have had Messi, apparently, couldn't we?
I reckon you're looking at least double that now.
Yeah.
He's had a good year, and he'll be an England squad.
Yeah, he will.
Right, I'm just going to run through. I'm just going to read these questions out, and then we can discuss about anything we want. But I just want to name check these people. Highbury librarian. Aside from their individual qualities, do Chambers and Mavrapanos fit well together as a centre back partnership?
Can I say Highbury librarian does really good tweets?
He does. No question about it. Exactly. I think, have I done Joe Gagliardi? Joe Gagliardi, does replacing Wenger with a former Arsenal player, Arteta or Vieira, give Gazidis and the board more power than hiring an established manager? Are they looking for someone to mould into their ideal manager? I think we've covered that more or less. Jonathan Houseman, are the owners showing us exactly the ambition they don't have by giving this job to Arteta? Never managed a game in his life, and is that really the best we could do? Everton don't even want him. Peter Squire, what in terms of on-field performance do you think represents success for the new manager, head coach next season?
Well, we said that fourth place.
Definitely covered that. And Robert Gregory, the hope or expectations for next season? We all know there will be a new manager. What does the panel hope expect as the bare minimum? A notable defensive improvement allied to a return to the top four?
A notable defensive improvement allied to a top four place and or winning the Europa League. I think the second one is the minimum, and Europa League would be a nice bonus, but we have definitely covered that. So, gentlemen, what would your feeling be if Arteta was named as the next manager?
I've got to say, I interviewed him through the Gooner at London Colney, and he was he came across as a very considered, very articulate, very thoughtful man, basically. And he had deep principles, he had a real respect and knowledge of Arsenal Football Club. He's obviously gone away and enhanced that through spending time with Pep Guardiola and his ethos as well. Obviously, people are going to go, yeah, he's not been a manager anywhere, and that is the big question, basically. But it's a coach, as the guy said, and it's like, that's different from being a manager. And
in terms of inspiration, in terms of motivating players, is there a difference between the captain
and being a manager? But what do you mean by manager? Do you mean by a coach who can, you know, sort of relay his principles, get the team organised, get the defence solid, get the attackers going? Or are you talking about someone who's charismatic, who can go in and have this sort of ready Brett glow around him that will inspire people?
Well, I'll put it to you like this. The art of the modern manager is the ability to motivate millionaires. Now, can you do that? If you couldn't do it as a captain, can you do it as a manager?
I think that's the challenge, isn't it? There's two major failings for me that we've seen over more years than I care to think about right now. The defence, we've already talked about. We need someone to come in and drill the defence, organise and put in some proper defenders. Harry Maguire again. But motivation, to go out there against Brighton, against West Brom, against all the teams that we've struggled to beat this season in the bottom half, and get your millionaire players, your £350,000 a week midfielder, turning up and putting in a performance that the fans can watch and be proud of. Win or lose. Sometimes I try and separate that, because I think I used to be able to do that back in the 80s. You know, I used to come away from a game, oh, we played well, I got hammered 3-0. We did all right. You know, but there's so many times when you come away going, we were fucking shambles. We were shocking. They know it. And you've got to lay that at the manager's door. He's not motivated. He's not prepared the players to go out on the pitch and be right up for it from the first minute. And I do worry that that might be an issue with Arteta. But just thinking back, and I meant to do this last night and I forgot. I was going to read what I wrote in the editorial after Wenger was appointed to see what my reaction was to that.
Good, yeah.
And I have to say, I'm not sure it would have been a great difference than if we appoint Arteta. I probably was disappointed at the time that it wasn't someone I'd ever heard of before. At least I've heard of Arteta.
To return to Fish Pie Gooner, he did also tweet, do fans who criticise Arsenal for seriously considering Arteta need to be reminded that Bertie Mee had also never managed a game in his life, or played one for that matter, but paired with the right coach won the club's first trophies in 17 years. In fact, I think that is a distinction. Don Howe was his coach.
Effectively, the first team manager now is probably going to be the combination of those two roles.
I mean, obviously people have said Bowles not left the club. What's Bowles' role going to be in this? If Arteta comes back and Arteta utilises Bowles as the way we all think that Bowles can be used as a defensive coach, that could be the sort of Don Howe, Bertie Mee sort of combination.
But we don't see Steve Bowles being the Don Howe.
No,
But I think if he was anything worth having as a coach,
he would have done something
or he would have walked.
Get
Keown in. He did a good job for 6 months.
I've heard others talk really passionately. I think Lee Dixon is superb when he talks about how Arsenal do and don't defend and what could go on. On the Arteta thing, I think I'd be perfectly fine with it. It doesn't have me jumping up and down. And I think if everyone's honest, it doesn't. We can all see the rationale for it, but it might be, well, that's the best that's out there. Let's give him a go. And I thought into today, we'd support him. But it doesn't have that. If a couple of years ago, they'd have been bold and said, right, you're out, it's Klopp. Or a couple of years earlier, they'd have been bold and said, right, you're out, Guardiola. We'd have been, rubbing our hands, excited, bouncing. I think Arteta, you kind of get, in the round, you know, there's probably no really big beast out there that we can get or who would want to come to us, so we've got to drop to the kind of second level, and he's at the top of the second level for me. Let's see how he gets on.
I think he's probably at the top of the third level, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
He must have developed some kind of reputation to be considered.
Obviously, he's got some reputation. I'd like him to have managed somewhere.
I think that's the thing.
And I think, you know, the game is not the game in 1971. The game is not even the game when Arsene joined. You know, it has changed. It's a lot more concentrated with wealth and experience at the top. And it's definitely, for a manager that's never has to take a press conference after a game as the manager, which is a huge skill in itself, learning how to play all your awkward buggers and the messages that you want to come out and how that fits.
How you react.
But nothing is training like doing it. He's going to have to do it 50 times next year in front of the camera.
He's got calm personality
and all of that. And then he's never done any of it. Like, it is a, you know, and I think, you know, you know, for me, I think a week ago I was much more hoping it would be Vieira, but that's probably the heart talking about, you know, what a great player he was in a great team, and that doesn't necessarily translate to being the better manager out of the two. But I think there was just something more emotional in me about Vieira than Arteta.
I think you're right. I mean, I'd agree with you. If you put Vieira and Arteta, I think nine out of ten people would go Vieira, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But that is heart talking. Vieira's, you know, he's managed a game in New York. You know,
okay.
I'm not sure that really counts. Sorry, American viewers.
A couple of years alongside Pep has been more than a few years managing in, it was not years, but a few games managing in New York. I take that. But I think there's probably, you know, Leif is going to think that Allegri is going to walk over broken glass and come to Arsenal, but he's probably the only realistic big beast out there. And I'm not sure that a mixture of the money Arsenal have got and what he'd expect will get him. And I think you are actually looking at the likes of Arteta. And yeah, fine, let's get on with it. Let's be excited and let's support
the team
in August. But we're saying that more like because we know we should, rather than there being a great sort of burning desire for Arteta.
Either way, they've got to appoint someone over the next couple of weeks before the World Cup, because they cannot leave it during the World Cup.
Well, no, the point being, Leif, he's not responsible for the transfers.
No, but you want to get in there as soon as possible, just to get
in
there.
There's no one there. Pre-season starts.
We should have him on the 8th of July or whatever it is.
I tend to agree,
I've got a week's holiday at the end of May. I know they're going to appoint him in that week, and I'm going to have to rush back. But the sooner the better. Just to go. Look, there you go. Get in. Get
you joke. But I actually think that they will want to do it quite soon because they want to go on holiday. Seriously, because as you know, in the big...
Where do you reckon Gazidis would go on holiday?
Because he hangs around in an FA committee or two. But actually, Ganella, all the team and the commercial people, all that work that would be done on the videos and the promotion of it, an awful lot of them take 4 or 5 weeks in June off because they know there's nothing going on before the big tour. I would be amazed if it's not announced by the end of next week.
It's got to be. Got to be.
Okay, well, we've been chatting for over an hour, so I'm going to wrap it up there. Interesting summer ahead, no question at all.
We haven't asked your views yet, though, Kev. What do you think?
I am the host.
It's Kevin Richard. He's got to have an opinion.
Well, I think...
You buy next year's Goose.
Yeah, exactly.
Arteta would be underwhelming.
Right. Who would you have?
Well, you want Fantasy Island or reality?
Fantasy Island first.
Fantasy Island, Simeone.
Okay. Not too volatile.
That's no, what we need. No, it's exactly what we need there. Can you imagine? That would be the one thing that would get that bloody Emirates Stadium rocking.
It would be an earthquake, wouldn't it?
It would be proper earthquake.
1-0 to the Arsenal.
You could send him off a touchline, he'd still be doing his thing for the director's box. When Alessico were playing here. I couldn't take my eyes off the guy. So anyway, that's that.
So what was the non-fantasy one?
I've heard that Allegri is a bit of a gambler and would actually... I think he feels that he's done it at Juventus.
Needs a challenge.
And he'd quite fancy just really showing how good he could be. And there's no better place to do that in the Premier League given the current situation.
That would be the hope or what you'd get him on.
Yeah, completely good.
So that's my opinion for what it's worth. As there are no more matches this season, no requirement to plug the end of season issue of the Gooner, although it can be bought online through our website store if you still want it. Subscriptions are still open for our 6 editions next season. which will rise to 64 pages per issue. These, sorry about that. These can also be bought through our website store. Simply search for the subscriptions page.
Can I just stop you there? Just a quick line, just to say, huge well done to yourself for your two noises and blow your own drum. Mike, everyone, Tim, everyone, for getting behind to save the Gooner the other week.
Yes.
It, absolutely fantastic effort from every fan and everyone behind it and everyone associated with it and everyone who's ever read it. Well done.
Totally. You've outlasted Arsene Wenger.
I must say, I wasn't thinking that a year ago. Weird how things work out. As usual, a reminder that you can contact us regarding anything to do with the podcast via Twitter at Gooner Podcast, email goonerpodcast@gmail.com, and many thanks for the questions and topics submitted for today. I think I mentioned everybody, although I will just mention Charles Cherian, who had a question held over from last month, which has kind of now slipped into meaningless territory because Arsene has departed. So sorry about that. Events overtook us. With that, it is goodbye from Mike.
Goodbye, farewell.
Tim.
See you next season.
And Laith.
Cheers.
We will be back in August once the season's kicked off. Until then, enjoy the summer, the World Cup, and the ins and outs at Arsenal Football Club. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thanks for listening. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Well, hey!